As you probably know, if you've been to any of these before, this is part of the Secret Life of Radio. It's a Frankie lecture and seminar. We have a seminar that's going on. The students are here. And in addition, we got these evening lectures. And this is the fourth in our series on the Secret Life of Radio. I'm delighted to introduce Galen Joseph Hunter and Tom Rowe to you, who are the dynamic team behind Wavefarm. Wavefarm is a nonprofit arts organization that's dedicated to experimentation with broadcast media and the airwaves. Located on a large 29-acre property in upstate New York, Wavefarm is many, many things. It is a terrestrial radio station broadcasting on WGXC 90.7 FM with access to the Hudson Valley communities. It's a research center for work in the transmission arts with an extensive library and archive. It's a site for artistic residencies and for artists working with the radio spectrum. It's a place of site-specific transmission arts, many of which are streaming 24/7 on the internet, including a hydrophone broadcasting from a pond on the property and the wonderful Weather Warlock, a weather-controlled analog synthesizer, which is perfect if John Durham Peters were here. This is your thing, your jam. Their visionary work has really helped to demonstrate a model of what terrestrial radio in the United States can be, namely community-based, focused on access to the airwaves, encouraging creative exploration of the radio spectrum, and cultivating new radio works and programming. Galen is the executive director with an extensive background in nonprofit arts administration and arts curation. Her writings on the transmission arts, namely as the author of the book Transmission Arts, Artists and Airwaves from 2011, and as editor and author of a special issue of PAJ, Journal of Performance and Art, on the transmission arts, have given precise conceptual articulation to the notion of the transmission arts, and they've helped to direct attention to the history and contemporary vibrancy of the stunning variety of artistic work that's being done with the radio frequency spectrum. Tom Rowe is the artistic director. He's a sound transmission artist. He's self a radio host and one of the original founders of Free 103.9, pirate radio station in Brooklyn, which eventually transformed into Wavefarm. Starting as a so-called radio pirate and traversing the worlds of microcasting, low-powered FM, and now Wavefarm, Tom's artistic work and his knowledge has been crucial to developing community of transmission artists who intersected with Free 103.9 and now with Wavefarm, and in the large development of the transmission arts more generally. He's active as a performer, a writer, a lecturer, an educator on the history of radio performance and microcasting. Galen and Tom are true and tireless pioneers in the transmission arts. Very grateful to have them here today. And when I first thought of this series of The Secret Life of Radio, I really couldn't imagine doing it without inviting Galen and Tom to come and speak. So without further ado, Galen Joseph Hunter and Tom Rowe, thank you for being here.
Thanks, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. We had a great time with the seminar students earlier today. And it's terrific to be able to delve a bit deeper into some of the projects Brian mentioned and some which we just started to allude to earlier. So what you're looking at is this resolution is not super, but so my apologies. But you're looking at the home screen of wavefarm.org, which currently features a photograph of Zach Poff's Pond Station, and we'll talk about that in just a bit. But first, a little background and context about Wavefarm. Our mission statement is up there. It says, we are a nonprofit arts organization driven by experimentation with broadcast media and the airwaves. A pioneer of the transmission arts genre, Wavefarm programs provide access to transmission technologies and support artists and organizations that engage with media as an art form.
We began in March 1997 as a microcasting collective. Microcasting was kind of the word used by the pirate radio community to distinguish ourselves from broadcasting. Broadcasting is casting to a large area. Microcasting is casting to a small area. That simple. But there were thousands of pirate radio stations across the country at this time, loosely banded together to try to effect change, and eventually we got that change over the course of two laws got passed through Congress, and there are now 3,000 or 4,000 legal low-power FM stations across the country providing people with community access. So we started that way in Brooklyn, 97. We and till 2004, we had a space in Brooklyn right next to the Williamsburg Bridge where we hosted experimental performances, radio experiments, and more. And then we became a nonprofit arts group around 2004.
2003. We're married, so we're going to correct each other as this talk goes on. That airwaves are public space and should therefore be accessible by the public, and that airwaves should be available for creative purposes, experimentation, and risk-taking is the ideology that has driven our activities since its inception. As Tom mentioned, we became nonprofit in 2003. We evolved from an artist collective to an arts organization whose mission is to define and cultivate transmission arts. In 2005, we expanded activities up to Greene County in upstate New York, launching an artist residency program, outdoor performance series, and installation park on a 29-acre property called Wave Farm.
In 2007, we found out, I guess, the Federal Communications Commission is about every 20 years or so kind of inventories its airwaves and said, oh, we've got a number of airwaves that could be open frequencies that could be used. And so they had this full power open application process for nonprofit groups in 2007 to apply for full power stations. And we did, and we won out in our area against national church organizations that file thousands of applications all at once through their computers, but we had more local points, and so we got WGXC 90.7, a 3,300-watt station that covers a good swath of the Hudson Valley.
Right, and the station was designed to serve both sides of the organization's roots, radio art and activism on the airwaves. So some may recognize Sex and Broadcasting as the title of the 2014 documentary about WFMU, but the title's origin is from this book, Sex and Broadcasting, a Handbook on Starting Community Radio Stations, written by Lorenzo Malam in the early 70s. This is a copy of the volume in the Wave Farm Study Center Library. It's the 1972 edition. And Tom's going to share just a brief passage from this lively publication.
Oh, radio. Broadcasting as it exists now in the United States is a pitiful, unmitigated whore. At some state in its history, there was a chance to turn it to a creative, artful, caring medium, but then all the toads came along, realizing the power of radio and television to hawk their awful wares. The saga of broadcasting in America is littered with the bodies of those who wanted to do something significant and who were driven out, or more correctly, sold out, by the pimps and thieves who now run the media.
So today, nearly 50 years later, so much but so very little has changed. In his book, El Malam offers an extremely entertaining, while remarkably informative, guide to starting a community radio station. And this is, you know, something, as Tom was saying before, that we at Wave Farm have a firsthand knowledge of, and we'll talk more about later. But I mention El Malam here because the sentiments in the passage Tom performed resonate deeply with Wave Farm's mission at large. So that's our dog, Dash. And we do all kinds of radio at Wave Farm. And on the left is a diagram attempting to outline the expansive activities of Wave Farm Radio. So they include GXC, as mentioned. Do you want to say anything else about GXC at this moment? You mentioned the listenership already, right?
I did. Well, I
said the wattage. Did
I
you
said
say
the wattage? Okay. I didn't say the listenership was potentially 78,000 plus, but. I think the dog image is up because we try to give access to the airwaves to everyone. All kinds of people from 8-year-olds to 80-year-olds are on the station, but also there are local owls and fish and dogs on the station too.
This is true. And under continuous streams, you'll see mention of several of the long-term site-specific installations on the property, which Tom hinted at. Transmit Partners is a rapidly expanding network of like-minded organizations and individuals. They're using the Wave Farm Radio app and our streaming server to share their own content and listeners can tune in via the partner's website, the app, our website, and then we often pick up these streams and relay them out to via FM to the listeners of WGXC.
Much like 1930s radio, where you would hear an orchestra on the air at 8 o'clock live from some venue in Chicago or New York City, on our radio station you'll hear a band performing at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill or Basilica Hudson or Esplanade Spires in Brattleboro or something.
So that's just a snapshot of the partners. And the partners really enable a place where community radio, community media, and the transmission arts converge. So we keep saying transmission art. What do we mean by transmission art? We say artists experiments with the electromagnetic spectrum. A subgenre of the media arts, we define transmission art as encompassing works where the electromagnetic spectrum is an intentional actor, either formally or conceptually. The electromagnetic spectrum is vast, includes 7 primary types of waves: radio waves, microwaves, infrared waves, visible light rays, ultraviolet waves, X-rays, and gamma rays. And you guys thought I was going to sing the song, but I didn't. I could, maybe later. Naturally occurring radio waves are emitted by lightning and astronomical objects. Radio-related projects, either conventional radio artworks, audio made explicitly for radio broadcast, or do-it-yourself radio-based installation and performance, where artists might build their own transmission and receiving devices, or common manifestations of transmission art in action. Another common trajectory of the genre is making the ethereal tangible. For example, works that demonstrate a physical delineation of space through sonic or visual representation, the architecture of transmission and reception. Transmission art encompasses works where the act of transmitting or receiving is not only significant, but the fulcrum for the artist's intention. These works often challenge conventional relationships of transmitter or artist and receiver or audience, and they celebrate a Brechtopian utopia interactive, the Brecht's utopia vision for a two-way interactive media. When we talk about radio out of bounds, we mean artists who approach the medium of radio unconventionally. Radio waves are the medium and the subject, literally, conceptually, even speculatively. So here you're looking at the United States frequency allocation of the radio spectrum, and color is revealed on the parts of the spectrum utilized by the artists and projects we'll talk about and listen to in just a moment. And at the bottom, you see where radio sits within the larger electromagnetic spectrum. And because Wavefarm and the community of artists we work with are tend to fetishize these sorts of illustrations, I'll share with you Maximilian Goldfarb's 2017 limited edition print, which he created on the occasion of Wavefarm's 20th anniversary. So Goldfarb's drawing interprets and illustrates the radio frequency allocation chart at the bottom. You can recognize it there, as well as a transceiver and wireless router circuit at the top. So this was an edition of 200, and the dimensions for reference are roughly like 21 inches by 24.
This is Wavefarm in Acre, New York. The Wavefarm Study Center is what we call the building. It has a research library and listening library. There are 2 bedrooms for mostly for our artists in residency program, although we also have visiting artists often come. There's a... 2 radio studios in the building, and am I missing anything else?
Workspaces, offices.
It's on 29.
Did you mention the library?
I did mention the library.
Okay.
It's on 29 acres, we do all kinds of live broadcasts. There's also a radio truck we'll show you on the property where we can broadcast from, and some other things out in the fields.
All right. So let's explore a few artists and artworks that embody radio out of bounds. The first is Aaron Dilway's Everyone Eats Garbage. Created during his 2018 residency at Wavefarm, Dilway is a celebrated improviser and composer who works with quarter-inch tape loops in 8-track cartridges, as well as other discarded electronic equipment. You get a sense of his kind of workspace on the right there. In his performance-based practice, he manipulates magnetic tape in real time by feeding the loops, sounds from his own body, everyday objects, electronic sources, prepared tapes, as well as the occasional actual musical instrument. Everyone Eats Garbage is an example of an artist drawing from the literal physical tools of radio to create something for conventional broadcast presentation. It's radio folded back onto itself, radio on the radio.
And he's using these tape carts. These radio cart machines are basically like cassette players or 8-track players made just for radio. The tape is usually just like a minute long or 30 seconds long, and it just holds one advertisement or one station ID or one...
Or one sound effect of dish noise or a jackhammer or a typewriter, as we see here. So Everyone Eats Garbage is a radio work informed by a large archive of obsolete sound effect tape carts that were once used by KXLU 88.9 FM in Los Angeles. And Dillaway extends the life of these abandoned and outdated radio artifacts by cutting, splicing, looping, and manipulating them into new and substantial work for broadcast. And we will take a listen to maybe 2 minutes of it now.
That's Aaron.
Whoops. Oh, yes, that's Aaron. So that was more of like a minute and a half, because I think we're running long. But the whole piece is just over 30 minutes and available on the Waveform website if anyone's interested in listening in totality. So let's jump back in time to the influential artist Jose Maceda, who was born in Manila in 1917 and died in 2004. He was incredibly prolific, yet remains underrecognized by most contemporary scholars. The artist Aki Onda has been researching and speaking about Maceda's work with frequency and is restaging his Ugnayan for 20 radio stations at the Fridman Gallery in New York as part of the New Year Festival this January. In a talk earlier this year at the Asia Art Archive, Onda describes Ugnayan for 20 Radios as one of Maceda's masterpieces and probably the most ambitious, provocative, and controversial works among his repertoire. It's a 51-minute long piece that consists of 20 recorded tracks. Ugnayan explores the same concept that Maceda used for an earlier work called Cassette 100, which was performed at the Cultural Center of the Philippines in 71. Where 100 participants carried cassette players up and down the center's staircases. Their movements were choreographed with intention so the sounds would move and fly inside the space. Ugnayan engages a similar idea, multi-tracks, multi-sounds, impacted by the environment and the participants, but this time Maceda used actual radio stations as the transmission spectrum for sound diffusion. With the assistance of Imelda Marcos, who was the president of the Philippines Cultural Center during 100 Cassettes, Maceda was able to employ all 37 radio stations in metropolitan Manila. And let's just take a moment to really appreciate that. No other radio programming was heard during the event. all of the stations in Manila were participating, playing one of the 20 tracks of Ugnayan. It was broadcast on New Year's Day in 1974 from 6 to 7 p.m. They identified 142 listening sites across Manila where audiences were encouraged to bring a transistor radio and catch one of the radio frequencies, and they say between 2 and 20 million people were listening to that broadcast. The scale of the project was unprecedented. It was possibly the biggest event in the field of avant-garde arts in Asia at that time. So Aki Onda's restaging of Ugnayan at Fridman will be realized in collaboration with Wave Farm, and we're recreating it as a microcast installation. It's a gallery-specific version that's going to use 20 different low-power FM transmitters, each operating on a unique frequency, and then there'll be radio receivers positioned throughout the gallery space. Obviously, being inside of an environment with 20 different frequencies being active and alive is a very different experience than what I'm going to play for you now. But in 2010, John Zorn's Zadig label put out a stereo recording of the piece, so we can just give you a little sense of what it sounds like.
And this is what it sounded like on one frequency?
I think this is they say it's a stereo recording, but it'll be much more spatial and multi-channel in the gallery. All right, so about 40 years later, Ed Baer's radio organ is another artist's approach to occupying the FM spectrum. This experimental array of micro radio transmitters is a multi-channel synthesizer, transmitting to any and every available station across the FM spectrum. To create the organ, Baer prepared or hacked early devices called iTrips, which were intended to connect iPods to car radios. And like Masita's work, Baer's organ embodies a dynamic in both scale and content physical space, where every station on your FM dial is composed. And hopefully the volume's gonna be okay here. Let's see. This is Ed talking about the piece in 2015.
My name's Ed Baer. I like to think of myself as a wizard of sorts. Really, the more so the manipulation of light and sound and ideas and parts of mind. I work a lot with found electronics, reused electronics, or e-waste, as it's kind of commonly thrown about, or things that are going to become e-waste. Each one of these used to be an iTrip, which was meant to transmit from your iPod to your car radio. But this is intensely obsolete, and you can buy these for 10 cents a piece on eBay if you buy like 100 of them. And when you open them up, they look like this, and they're really just a radio transmitter once you you hack them on a little bit. What's neat about this is that I created this little parasitic circuit that plugs into the connector on the iTrip that when you wire them all together, lets them talk to one another, lets them talk to a computer, lets them talk to a MIDI synthesizer. There's this kind of this mechanism inside of each one of these transmitters in that it's a little computer that can be used to do anything that you can tell a computer to do, that then you can hook that computer up to the rest. That then if you hook that computer up to the outside world. It's a little modular synthesizer which you can plug other sound sources into that will end up on the radio. Or it can synthesize its own sounds. And it's 8 different radio stations that can be programmatically controlled what station they're transmitting on about 200 times a second. I have 2 radios here. I'll turn one to one station and one to another station. And change the station of each transmitter. You can hear now that this radio station is picking up the silence that this is transmitting.
So Jeff Thompson's Every Radio Station, developed while in residence, also makes use of the entire FM spectrum in a given location. Thompson says, while we only hear one radio station at a time, typically, the terrestrial radio spectrum is an artificially divided continuum filling the air around us. This installation makes the FM spectrum physical. 95 hand-built FM radios, one for each slot in the FM band, form a 30-foot line. All of the radios play simultaneously, letting visitors hear the entire spectrum at once or walk closely along the line to hear the stations individually. For each location the piece is installed in, a totally different sonic experience occurs, obviously, based on what's happening in terms of the radio spectrum in that location. And Thompson predicts that as reallocation of the radio spectrum happens, moves to streaming devices, that the piece too will reflect those changes. The piece isn't as cacophonous as you might expect. This is installed at the Fridman Gallery. It was also reinstalled at the School of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. It's kind of a white noise, kind of enjoyable, low hum fuzz. And then as you walk along it, you hear each individual station. We have a little sample recording here. So moving away from the FM spectrum, Montreal-based artist Gambletron used her residency to further develop Drone Oscillator, a large-scale, multi-tonal AM radio theremin.
And a theremin, if you don't know, is an instrument that uses electromagnetic frequencies that you don't touch to make sound by changing the frequency and or the pitch. And so you want to play a little bit of that?
Yeah, let's see. So her residency culminated with an installation and performance on the Olana Historic Site, State Site location, in an event called Groundswell that Wayfarm organized annually over 3 years. And this is Gambletron outfitted as the third radio in her theremin, and she's going to tell us a little bit about it.
This is going to be the most radios I've ever set out in one spot, thanks to Wayfarm and this residency. Every note that occurs in the theremin rows is constantly moving. It goes up, it goes down. So the chord changes. It changes with the wind. It changes with the presence of people. It changes for whatever reason. I find it so much easier to just explain it as magic.
So yeah, you get the two radios and you tune them in the AM frequency, usually on the higher end. And you look for the dead zone, and then you get a third radio and you put it in front, and you start tuning that, there's this one point that you have to find. You're testing antennas at that one point, and then bang, you don't have to solder, you can use alligator clips. It's bang, it's a theremin. Literally, like, there's an antenna, and you go close and far, and the note changes, like, and so my arm is the antenna in this demonstration.
All right, so moving slightly farther out of the bounds of radio, Zach Poff, who you saw this image earlier, engages a different sort of site-specific environment with his pond station. Pond station transmits the hidden activity within a pond at Wave Farm from dawn until sundown. It's a solar-powered structure. It floats atop the spring-fed pond. And suspended from it are a pair of custom-built by Poff hydrophones, revealing what is typically unheard sounds from within the pond. And then the sound is transmitted, is broadcast to local listeners on an AM station we have specific to the property, as well as the FM, WGXC, and online to international audiences. So Pond Station, like many of the works at Wave Farm, functions as a standalone work of art, but also an interactive instrument for visiting artists. We've had people play the Japanese flute in duet with Pond Station, or float sonic objects and then record the stream or spoken word shouted into the pond.
Because sound waves travel through water a long distance and great. So you can yell into the side of the pond and the waves will go through the water into the microphone, which is... on the picture on the right, the microphone on the bottom is on the bottom, protected by that metal to stop the beaver from chewing on it.
Which did actually happen, as we were talking about before.
Yes, the beavers chewed on the microphone, and the turtles love to live on top of the styrofoam on the floating part. They like to sun themselves there. So you get those sounds and all kinds of other sounds.
And this is just a minute of Pond Station.
Magic.
Oop, that's still Gambletron talking. This is from a raining afternoon recording. Let's see. Another project that's responsive to weather is Quintron's Weather Warlock.
And this has sensors outside on the left here that sense the changes in precipitation, where it says snow, the changes in sunlight, the changes in wind, and the changes in temperature. And then it converts those changes into sound. And then all the other knobs let artists manipulate the weather or the sounds of the change in the weather however they want.
And this project streams also on the website 24/7. Oh, actually, 23/7, because we shut it down for 1 hour every night because Quintron says that his electronics need to take a nap sometimes.
And the pond is solar powered, so it only broadcasts when there's daylight, and then it lasts like an hour after sunset.
So here's a little bit of what the Weather Warlock sounds like.
And so it sounds radically different if there's a lot of change in the weather, and it sounds more boring when there's no change in the weather.
And if you're listening to online stream, as a listener, you don't really know if someone's in the studio playing the instrument or not.
And we do our local morning weather forecast with this playing and the sound of the pond playing and an outside mic playing. So you don't even hear just the forecast, you hear the sound of the actual weather at the moment.
All right, so test site of the Acoustic Commons. Was installed by London-based Grant Smith of SoundCamp at the conclusion of a Wave Farm residency just last month. It's a listening point linked to an online network of open microphones. It's a stream box on the edge of a woodland at Wave Farm, and it sends a live feed to the server at Locus Sonus in Marseille, France, where it is publicly accessible on a real-time sound map. By placing such sites in the public domain, TSAC for short, makes local sounds available to listeners for whatever purposes. This can be a way to pay attention to underrecognized places, to study their changing soundscapes through days, seasons, and long durations, and to tune between local and planetary scales. So there's omnidirectional microphones, which are open to the full range of sounds reaching the stream box. This can include insects, wind, in different seasons of foliage, birds, planes, passerbys, flows of traffic on the nearby Route 23.
But the best noises are the owls, the coyotes, and the frogs. Mm.
This is the Locus Sonus sound map. So these are all open microphones on the left here. And then if you zoom in to the waveform location, you see the two microphones, one being Pond Station, which also uses Locus Sonus, and the other the test site of Acoustic Commons. And let's see if we can listen live.
And Locus Sonus is like Waveform is a archival place or for transmission art. Locus Sonus is the portal for field recordings from around the world. And it's taking a second to connect.
Let's see if it's going to connect.
Doesn't look like it.
No, maybe not. I wonder. Well, anyway, it's on the Waveform website. And if we were listening live, it would basically be the sounds of what's happening literally at Waveform right now. Probably some occasional traffic, maybe some dogs running
around. It'll
be
better later tonight when the snowstorm starts.
Yeah. So the most recent installation at Waveform is now nearly complete. It's pictured on the left here. It's called Here Goes Radio Telescope. Phase one of the project is purely visual. In keeping with the other projects on the property, it aims to activate and reveal otherwise unnoticed or inaccessible aspects of the environment that utilize the electromagnetic spectrum. Here Goes creates an avenue for individuals to directly relate to the usually invisible infrastructure we rely on. The diagram displayed on the right demystifies a bit of what's happening inside the wooden-clad reclining structure. A visitor climbs into the structure and views an inset monitor that displays the image stream from the GOES-16 weather satellite's constant radio transmission. GOES-16 is a geostationary satellite operated by NOAA and used to track weather activity. The stream serves as a reminder of the ubiquitous invisible radio data surrounding us and how much we rely on our orbiting infrastructure and these streams for weather forecasting, storm monitoring, Gesundheit, and many other services. By receiving the status stream as individuals, we participate directly in these activities and are reminded that such unmediated participation is possible. This is a sample of what the images look like. The project collects about a terabyte of information daily. These are like extremely high resolution images that are not available anywhere on the internet. They're used by AccuWeather and NASA and organizations like this to help predict weather patterns.
And you have to actually sit there and wait for the 3 seconds for the signal to come down from the satellite. So you get a sense of actually how waves work and right. Travel.
So it's like just under 3 seconds for 22,000 miles travel. This is a close-up of that same, a detail of the image you just saw before, trying to convey a little bit of the resolution.
And we're trying to fight with it now because I guess Halloween night there was a big storm. Charlie's big storm down here too. It was a big storm up where we are, and it blew the satellite receiver maybe a half a millimeter to one side, and a half a millimeter is when you're shooting at a satellite in space is like we're miles and miles and miles off now, so we're trying to get it back.
There are some guy wires in our future. Yes. So we will finish up with something unfinished. This is Brecht's unfinished TypeScript from 1927, published in the Bloomsbury Brecht on Film and Radio. On utilizations, the question of how art can be utilized for the radio and how the radio can be utilized for art, two very different questions, must at some point be subordinated to the much more important question of how art and the radio can be utilized at all. If we are right or judged to be in the right, then this question will be answered in the following way. Art and the radio must be put to pedagogical purposes. The possibility of implementing such a direct pedagogical utilization of art does not seem feasible today because the state has no interest in educating its youth about collectivism. Art must intervene where the defect is to be found. If seeing is not involved, it does not mean that one sees nothing, but equally that one sees an infinity of things, whatever you like. And thank you guys so much for having us. And we're doing Q&A if there are any. You're stepping back, you're not participating in that.
I know.
How should we do it? Yeah?
Personal favorites?
The pond station and Weather Warlock are probably my favorites because the pond station just sounds so different than maybe what you expect underwater to sound like. And I've been a huge fan of Quintron's work for 20 years or so getting to work with him was exciting.
Yeah, I'd agree on Weather Warlock. I tend to, I do a lot of grant writing for Wayfarm, and I tend to listen to Weather Warlock in the background. I find it very...
as a soothing...
therapeutic soundtrack. And then the Here Goes Radio Telescope, which is like just such an incredible feat that Heidi Nielsen and Harry Dev Robinson have pulled off. It's... they know of five other civilian listening stations around the world, but they're like with no budget. They're listening to this massive satellite.
They actually got a big satellite. It's like a satellite TV dish that one would have on their home.
It's a 10-foot dish that Heidi used in a prior project.
And then they used it. It wasn't quite getting the signal, so they put is it guinea pig wire?
Yeah.
So it's basically the last foot of the satellite is guinea pig wire that they attach themselves to make it a larger receiver and a better receiver, and it for very little money worked.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you talk a little bit about how and why you moved from Williamsburg to upstate New York instead of Wayfarm, and how your idea of doing interesting radio changed when you moved from one community to, I'm assuming, a really different kind of place?
You're assuming correctly.
Well, the most obvious is that the palette changed. Working with radio in Brooklyn was there's not much static. There's every single space on the dial is full of either a pirate or a commercial legal signal. Up where we are, there are spaces where there aren't a radio station on every single space. There certainly aren't any other pirates that we know of are here.
We talk about moving upstate to have more space, both on the radio dial and physical space for artists who are working in this way. And then the FM radio station, we didn't know that was going to be a possibility when we moved up, but as soon as that entered the picture, then we were like, it's basically like, put your money where your mouth is. You're talking about radio as parkland and that people should be able to have access to their own airwaves. So WGXC was born.
We gave many, many talks about radio as parkland and radio as should be owned by the public and accessible to the public. So when the license was available, we went for it right away. But to, I guess to your point, some were before we were beaming to probably more like-minded people in Brooklyn, and now we're beaming to a lot of people who have probably never considered the concept of art on the radio or radio as art. We're certainly broadcasting to a conservative base that went 2-1 for Trump. So it's a much different thing, and we're...
And we're also bringing local community voices and high schoolers running a candidate forum to an international radio art listenership who's listening to the stream online. So it is, it's like a...
And introducing... We've trained community programs to do community radio shows, but they are picking up what's going on the rest of the station with the radio art and incorporating that into their shows, too. So it's a weird hybrid.
A wonderful hybrid.
You had a question earlier, yeah.
Yes. I was wondering, some of the sounds and other recordings and broadcasts that have been done by yourself and others at Waveform, are they available, like, if you go to the website, is there any licensing procedure to use them, or can you just listen to them?
It's all available. It's
we mostly use Creative Commons rules, so they're up there with Creative Commons rules.
Awesome, thanks.
Are you pointing to people with questions, or you want me?
Person was. Why don't you go ahead, back?
Can I ask? Can you talk a little more about SoundCam? Did you say that there are open mics all over the world for that? And do they collect the sounds and mix them? And you said something about Marseille.
So the
Marseille is where Locus Sonus is located, which is where the server. Locus Sonus is the name of the website and the arc that's sort of a portal for field recording.
Right. It's associated with the university, but Locus, L-O-C-U-S, Sonus. SoundCamp is the project of the London-based artist Grant Smith, who works a lot with Locus Sonus. Creating these new stream boxes that are called Acoustic Commons, and the first one he was installing at Wavefarm this October. But SoundCamp, one project that they do that we've worked with them on for since its inception, 6 years
six,
now,
7 years ago,
it's called Reveille, and it's the first Saturday of May. It's timed with the International Dawn Chorus Day, and it is the sound of daybreak starting in London and traveling around the globe. And so we do that as a full 24-hour broadcast.
So it moves from London at 6 a.m. to Ireland at 6 a.m. to Iceland at 6 a.m. to Greenland at 6 a.m. to Nova Scotia at 6 a.m. to New York at 6 a.m. And sometimes it picks up underwater sounds in the ocean. The microphone's there. Sometimes it picks up air traffic control sounds if it's somewhere over the Pacific Ocean where there's not an open mic. But mostly it's birds, because birds start singing at the beginning of each day, and it's just sort of beautiful.
But the Locus Sonus map, each one of those little microphone icons is an open mic that you can listen to and mix if you so choose.
Yeah. Any day of the year.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Could be a silly question, because I just don't have a lot of experience with radio art, and I think all of it sounds cool. But I feel like I have no heuristic for how to distinguish good radio art from bad radio art. Are there some kind of combinations of random sounds that you listen to and you're like, oh, I don't like this as much as I like this other thing? And what makes that difference?
So the clips we played were kind of noisy, and that's not what all radio art is necessarily. But
you played some Gregory Whitehead for some people in this room, so that's radically different.
Yes.
Non-noisy.
And kind of with speech and voice. But I think you could apply the same aesthetic choice and reaction to any medium or art form. So it's basically what is provocative to you in what is enjoyable or unenjoyable enough that it makes you think and react.
We're probably more on the experimental and avant end of the scale, and more traditional radio art is probably is often more vocal based and more recognizable, probably.
Or then it starts to toe the line with people who identify as independent radio producers, and then you start to get into kind of podcast world, which we're sort of antithetical to. Yeah.
For the Gambletron drone oscillator project, I was wondering, because the theremin is in itself a musical instrument, I was wondering if they've ever, if that project has ever been coupled with other musical instruments to kind of use that theremin in a...
Has she been part of an orchestra?
She is a musician also, so I don't know if she's used to
I'm not sure if she has, but that's a very interesting question.
She may have,
She probably has.
Yeah.
But the history of the theremin is also connected to Henry Cowell, who encouraged an electronic version of that, so it might be worth looking at that as
Do artists in your residency tend to collaborate either with you guys or other artists, or do they tend to focus more on their own solo work?
In the residency program, people apply. We have several hundred applications every year, and we have to go through them. But they apply with a specific project, that's usually their own project or something with a collaborator. Does that start the question answer?
Yeah, but in terms of like whether that proposal is, we want to install an open microphone on the Wavefarm property and it will become one of your installations, or if it's, I'm going to come and work on this this sound work about my Iranian uncle who was a radio producer that was imprisoned. Like, that was another example of a resident this year. And Milad Mazari is that artist's name, and he was a joy to have around, but when he left, his project went with him. So it's I don't know statistically. So
several artists have come to us with big projects that have lots of different parts, and they come to work on just the radio part with us. And so there are many different ways it works.
Anytime someone's a resident with us, they have an open door invitation to return, as long as there's room at the inn. So it's, you know, there's a kind of a building of community that happens that way. Anybody else? No?
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, everybody.